Anyhow, when I was growing up playing ball, it was hot outside. We didn't have Gatorade. Some of these kids today have. They're giving stuff that makes it too easy for them. We were given salt tablets. Right, Jeff? Remember that? If you were out sweating, you had to have water and salt. So that's what I'm going to talk to you today about, salt. Salt is a compound of sodium. And if there's any chemists out there, that's capital A, letter little a. It's an unstable metal that can suddenly burst into flame. And chloride, Cl, a lethal gas. Combined, however, they form a substance that is essential for human life. Not too extreme to state that without it, salt, we would soon die. For instance, salt regulates and exchanges the water between cells and their environment, adding the absorption of nutrients and the disposal of waste into the bloodstream. Sodium, which the body cannot manufacture, is necessary for muscle contraction, as well as transmission of nerve impulses. Chloride is essential for digestion and respiration. An adult body contains about 250 grams of salt. And that's enough to fill 3 to 4 salt shakers. But we're constantly losing it through bodily functions, and it's imperative that we replace this lost salt. Funny story, I was at the a diner last week, and an old guy was sitting next to me. Old. I mean, this guy was old. Had to be 90. And I said to him, could you please pass me the salt and the pepper? He had to make 2 trips. Anyway, today we take salt for granted. We think of it as a common, inexpensive substance that seasons food and clears ice from roads. However, salt has many more amazing properties and uses. It seasons, it cures, and preserves. It also seals, cleans, and acts as an antiseptic. In a book put out by a salt company in the 1920s, the list of uses for salt included keeping colors bright on boiled vegetables, making ice cream, makes it freeze, whipped cream rapidly, and you get more heat out of boiled water if you add salt. It removes dust, it seals cracks, removes spots on clothes, puts out grease fires, kills poison ivy, and it treats sprains, sore throats, and earaches. One of the first things I give my kids when they say I got a sore throat, a little warm water and salt. The salt industry goes even further, claiming 14,000 different uses for this underappreciated substance. The Romans, going back in time here, appear to have esteemed salt very highly. Its army, for a time, was even paid in salt. The first of the great Roman roads was the Via Salaria, the Salt Road. Many of these and other historical tidbits can be found by reading Salt, A World History by Mark Nerlansky. It's a fascinating study of the only rock humans can eat. I mean, we can eat other rocks, but they're not good for us. So, during the times in which the Bible was written, salt was much more precious and people better understood its value. One use that is probably not even on the salt industry's list is that salt was used to accompany every offering. And if you want, you can turn to Leviticus chapter 2 and verse 13. Leviticus chapter 2 and verse 13. And every offering of your grain offering you shall season with salt. You shall not allow the salt of the covenant of your God to be lacking from your grain offering. With all your offerings you shall offer salt. The altar symbolizes God's table. And since salt is always on our tables, well, maybe not much today because we're told not to eat salt, but I eat salt. Since salt is always on our tables, God would have it always used at his. not to preserve the sacrifice, but because it was the food of God's table and should be salted, especially the meat. It was so important that it was provided by the temple, and you can look Ezra chapter 7, verse 22. It's stored in a room, it's called the Chamber of Salt in the court of the temple. And if you read the last couple of words there, it says, an unlimited supply of salt. Notice the phrase salt of the covenant in Leviticus chapter 2 and verse 13. It has become common throughout history for people to confirm their agreements with each other by eating and drinking together. There was a lot of reasons why people came together to eat and drink, and salt was used sometimes for that purpose. As salt was added to foods, not only for spice, but to also preserve them from decay, it became a symbol of incorruptibility and being permanent. You can put salt in water, the salt's still there. Even if you let everything dry out, you'll have the salt there. It won't go away. A covenant of salt signified an everlasting covenant. In the Bible, salt also came to symbolize purity, perfection, wisdom, hospitality, durability, and fidelity. And I'd also add in there, honesty. The need for various animal sacrifices passed with the death of Jesus, as we know. However, the Apostle Paul urges us to present our bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable to God, which is our reasonable service. In Romans chapter 12 and verse 1, Paul begins explaining the practical application of God's teaching. The first thing he mentions is that we are to be living sacrifices, holy and acceptable to God. For a sacrifice to be acceptable to God, it must be salted. So in symbolic manner, we must be salted as well. So what does this mean? We're going to examine three different traits of salt and apply them spiritually to our lives. Number one, salt preserves. Now, when we want something for dinner, we reach into our freezers for vegetables, meats, desserts, and whatever else we might be looking for. In earlier times, we would have gone to the storehouse and sliced off some salted meat, or to the cellar for pickled vegetables. Salt, therefore, has come to stand for durability, permanence, perpetuality, incorruptibility, and purity. This is why salt was used to gratify a covenant. It preserved and stood for permanence. In Numbers, and we'll turn to Numbers chapter 18 and verse 19, God says to Aaron, Aaron? Is it, right? Say Aaron. No? Close. All the heave offerings of the holy things which the children of Israel offer to the Lord, I have given to you and your sons and daughters with you as an ordinance forever. It is a covenant of salt forever before the Lord with you and your descendants with you. Adam Clark, he's a commentator, I guess, for the Bible, he states that the salt was opposite of leaven, for it preserved from rot and corruption and signified the purity and preserving fidelity that were necessary in the worship of God. You can see there's a lot of words here, purity, preserving, which is what we're supposed to be. The symbolism should be obvious to us as living sacrifices. We are to be without spot or blemish, pure, in other words. God does not change, and he does not lie. He has made certain covenants with his people that cannot be broken. We have only to live a life of obedience, which God helps us to do. Our sacrifice, then, is not a one-time deal, which is ongoing and perpetual, being just like salt preserves. Salt seasons, not seasons like the months, and it's seasons. It gives it flavor. The New King James heading above Mark chapter 9 and verse 49, Mark chapter 9 and verse 49, it reads, tasteless salt is worthless, which is certainly true. And most of us have probably never tasted salt that lost its flavor. I don't think it could lose its flavor, to be honest with you, but That's what it says here. But we can easily understand the concept. Christ tells his disciples in Mark chapter 9, verse 49 and 50, "For everyone will be seasoned with fire, and every sacrifice will be seasoned with salt. Salt is good, but if the salt loses its flavor, how will you season it? Have salt in yourselves and have peace with one another." The salt, which the words I gave before, is what we're supposed to have in us. Notice that Christ says, have salt in yourselves and peace with one another. So how do we do this? The Apostle Paul writes in Colossians chapter 4 and verse 6, "Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one." He is speaking specifically of answering those in the world, but should we not be even more gracious to those in our family? The Greek word Paul uses translated grace is charis, C-H-A-R-I-S, which means graciousness of manner or act, especially the divine influence upon our heart and its reflection in our life. Matthew Henry's commentary says, "Grace is the salt which seasons our discourse. Communication of thought by words makes it savory and keeps it from corrupting. The words that come from our mouths reflect upon us more than any other facet of our lives. When we gossip, which I hope we don't do, but people do, those words seasoned? Are they savory to the ears of others? When we speak in a hurtful manner to our family, both physical and spiritual, are those words seasoned?" Think of it this way. If we are living sacrifices, and if the altar is God's table, what kind of dinner table conversation would be appropriate for sharing a meal with God? Our actions, especially our speech, should always be done as if we are carrying on conversations at the table with Christ. Salt seasons. Most times, and I don't even measure how much salt I use because I'm a lazy cook, I take that salt grinder, right? Maybe four times. But if you put too little, you won't have any flavor. And if you put too much, you'll have too much salt. You won't taste the food. And Jesus says in Matthew chapter 15, which I'm sure we've read before many, many, many times, Matthew chapter 15 and verse 13, "You believers are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men." We must, as Matthew Henry comments, retain the relish and savor of the salt, purity, perfection, and wisdom, hospitality, durability, fidelity, honesty. For if the salt loses that, its saltiness, it loses the savor of it, and can no longer be under the power and influence of it, what can recover him who lost his salt? At one time, salt was thought to be very rare. As drilling techniques improved, it was discovered that the earth possessed huge underground salt deposits. Near the town of Cordona in Spain, there is literally a mountain of salt covered by a few feet of soil. Most of the mountain, around 70%, is pure rock salt. And there's many, many kinds of salt out there in this world. Just as God's people are rare now, we represent multitudes to be discovered in the future. Little salt goes a long way. These three points barely scratch the surface of the subject. We are to be salt. In those words I mentioned, purity, perfection, wisdom, hospitality, that's what we want to have in us. And God has built in many layers in the meaning of salt. What simple principle can we take away from this? God has called us to be living sacrifices. Being a disciple of Jesus is an ongoing process of striving for purity, perfection, wisdom, hospitality, durability, fidelity, and honesty, in which we must ensure that our lives are properly seasoned so that we may not lose our flavor and succeed in being among God's first fruits.